This is Hey Beautiful, the podcast where we binge and recap every episode of How I Met Your Mother. No spoilers. So suit up, grab a sandwich, and settle in. Hey, Kate. How are you?
Hey, Caitlin. I'm good. Feeling good.
Same. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I'm pretty excited because I have been waiting 2 weeks to eat this last ginger molasses cookie from our friends at Rachel's Cookies and Treats. So I'm very excited to see you today because that means I get to eat my cookie.
That's right. And we have some exciting cookie news coming up.
Yeah. So make sure to keep listening so you get more information about a cookie contest.
Yay.
Very exciting.
For our American listeners.
For our American listeners, yes. Yeah. We have to qualify that. So sorry to our international friends.
Kind of a mixed bag day in the Himyam universe. Saw on Twitter that Ron Nicolosi died. And he was Mike.
And the best at reading.
So he was the camera guy at Metro News One and then also ends up working with Robin again later on. So we'll see him in some upcoming episodes at her new job as well. But it sounds like he was so beloved on set. And Craig had such a nice post. Or was it Carter? One of the guys had a really nice post about how Ron would sort of stand in for a bunch of different people when they would do reads for, I think like the final read before it like went to production. And so I guess his delivery was so good that he saved a lot of jokes from getting cut.
Wow.
Yeah. So like all these little jokes. So yeah, he was like the stand in for that. And he did stand in work as well, I think for Neil, and so he had to wear these like lifts in his shoes to be like the right height, and I think it was Josh that was talking about that. So very sad. He seems like he really loved the work and had a great time, and he actually worked with Gloria Calderon Kellett again on One Day at a Time as well.
I love that's something I love hearing again and again from these interviews that we're doing is how like they kind of keep in touch with people and reach out when they have a job or keep people in mind.
Yeah, I know. So rest in peace, Ron. Thank you for all the laughs you gave us, all the laughs you saved. It was also Josh Radner's birthday this week.
Yep.
So thank you, everybody, for sharing your favorite Josh Radner GIFs. It was amazing.
And also, our full interview with Gloria Calderon Kellett is up on Patreon. And remember, you can join for as little as $2 a month to listen to that full interview. And it is spectacular. And I'm not just saying that just because. Yeah. It really was incredible to hear her talk about her experiences and as a writer and a showrunner and being a part of Himyam and all of that was just really great.
Yeah. And being a Latina in Hollywood and how I listened to the interview again and how she was talking about how there were so many things that she had to navigate and she didn't have anybody ahead of her to watch them navigate. And because of that, she felt like if she'd had that, maybe she would have been a little like not more further along, but maybe things would have gone a little more quickly in her career if she'd had, you know, the same role models and the same mentorship that you know, cishet white guys. I mean, they have like a really deep bench of people that they can look to for how to navigate the industry, but they're not facing microaggressions and sexism and, you know, being typecast all the time in the same way. So that stuff can really stall you. So it was a great interview. Thank you so much to Gloria. It was fantastic. And thank you. Shout out to her assistant, Emily, for helping us with that because she was a boss for that for sure.
Also, Derek, we're very, very sorry. Somehow we missed your legendary moment from last week for the Pasimpable.
Yep.
Ooh, I wasn't practicing it this week, so I was a little rusty there.
Yeah.
So we're going to go ahead and read it right now. So Derek's legendary moment for the Pasimpable is here. Here we go. My legendary moment for this episode is the theme song for Barney's resume. The fact that he's singing a song about how awesome he is absolutely hilarious. That is really just like the icing on the cake,
right?
I think.
But Derek, right in the song, it says this isn't Barney singing this song.
That would be lame.
That'd be really lame.
All right, guys. So stay tuned at the end of the episode for more legendary moments from this week's episode, The Stinsons.
Yay!
This episode of Hey Beautiful is brought to you by our Patreon Almighty 5-level members, Russell, Tish, Johnny, and Ben. Thanks to all of our patrons for their support of this show. Remember, our Patreon works on a sliding scale. You give what you can each month and you'll receive all the perks we offer. Join for as little as $2 a month at patreon.com/heybeautifulpod. All right, Kate, so now we are getting into the episode. I can officially eat the last cookie I have.
It looks so good. Walk us through this experience.
Okay, so it is nice and soft, just as fresh as the day they arrived on my doorstep. And so I broke it into a little quarter piece. You can see the little bit of sugar on the top. Very nice.
And what kind of cookie is this?
This is a ginger molasses cookie. It was nice and soft and like it kind of like bends before it breaks off a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, that real stickiness.
Mm-hmm. She's biting in.
Mm-hmm. You can crunch a little bit of the sugar on top, which I love.
Yeah.
A nice soft crumb.
Yummy.
And that spice, I just can't get enough.
Oof, I know. Ooh, I gotta take a cookie out and defrost it for myself. And speaking of cookies, times are tough right now. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure you get to experience Rachel's Cookies and Treats, our sponsor, for free if you live in the United States. We are gonna run a cookie contest where you can win a gift box of delicious cookies from Rachel's Cookies and Treats. They're homemade in small batches, no preservatives, all real ingredients. It's a woman-owned business.
Super delicious.
Super delicious. We're going to be giving away 5 gift boxes of cookies.
5.
From Rachel's Cookies and Treats. You'll get a delicious assortment of Caitlin's and my favorite cookies. Write us a post on social media, either Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Talk about why you love Hey Beautiful, tag us, and you'll be entered to win by Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get in your social media post about why you love Hey Beautiful and tag us, and we will enter you to win your very own box of our favorite cookies and treats from Rachel's Cookies and Treats. And in the meantime, if you are too excited and you really want cookies after listening to Caitlin's mouth-watering ASMR as she ate the ginger molasses, you can go to rachelscookiesandtreats.com, enter our promo code HBFAM, that's HBFAM, all caps, and you'll get 25% off your order. And you can even reuse the code. This is a contest only for our U.S. fans. Rachel's Cookies and Treats ships across the continental U.S. right now.
Now, Kate, if you do a post on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, is that 3 entries?
You can do 1 entry per social channel, and that'll add more chances that you'll win. You'll only win 1 box, but it'll increase your odds if you do a post on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Between now and Sunday night, write up to 3 posts, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, post them, tag us, and you'll be entered to win for every post you do. And if you can't wait to get your cookies, go to rachelscookiesandtreats.com and use the code HBFAM.
This is season 4, episode 15, The Stinsons. It first aired on March 2nd, 2009, and our writers are everyone's favorite English muffins, Craig Thomas and Carter Bays.
Yay!
And we haven't seen them in a a couple episodes, I feel like.
In a while, yeah. Right? I don't know the last one they wrote in season four, but it's definitely been, it's been a minute. So it's good to have him back. I mean, what an episode for them to write.
And it goes, you know, you talk about this a lot. I didn't even really need to look to see that it was them because it moves so quickly. Yeah. There's so much happening.
Right.
You could tell it was definitely one of theirs.
Yeah, and everybody gets a very filled out storyline. Like, everyone gets their own plot, and that's, you know, usually you'll have the A plot, and then the B plot is sort of, it's often, like, everybody sort of together that isn't in the A plot. But here we have Barney's story, we have Marshall and Lily's story, we have Robin and Tyler's story, and then we have Ted and Betty. So it's like, everyone has their own thing. Of course, not all of them are equally weighted, but it's still...
But they all fit together, too, and really round out the entire story. Yeah. And for two guest actors, we get to know a lot more about them.
Yep. And it's all taking place in one house, for the most part. So scenes are a little tough. So we'll be, you know, just discussing it and jumping in and out. But, yeah, just a really fun... quick episode.
So we open up with everyone sitting in their favorite booth at McLaren's, and Lily's pointing out some blondes drinking bad decision juice for Barney, who is completely and totally uninterested, which really is unlike him because drunken blonde is typically his type. Barney decides he's going to head out and is going to make a quick trip to the bathroom before he leaves. And while he's gone, the group takes that opportunity to talk about how he's been acting a little weird lately. And Ted agrees and mentions that he's like, you know how, I love this part, you know how Barney says you never buy a girl a living thing because it reminds him of babies? And everyone just is like, yeah, sure. Like,
it's another rule.
Continue. Yeah. So even though Barney has that rule, Ted actually saw him buying roses. And now that they're talking about it, even brings up a memory Marshall had in that he saw Barney at work and walks by his office and he hears him talking on the phone about weekend plans, includes a farmer's market, brunch, maybe a hike. There's an I love you too. And at the time, Marshall figured he was talking to a girl he was trying to sleep with or maybe Ted. But now, putting all this information together... It feels different. And I think the final nail in the coffin is when Barney kind of fumbles through his excuse for leaving.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, like, I had forgotten that Barney kept this up for 7 years. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy how well he's hidden it until now. And to me, it's like when a criminal starts making mistakes because
they get sloppy.
They get sloppy.
They're so confident.
They're confident. And they also, like, subconsciously want to get caught because it's just, it's exhausting. Getting out of control. Like, 7 years and, you know, dealing with Grant. So I was like, oh my God, 7 years. But I mean, and it makes sense that, like, maybe over time, one of them has seen something weird. Right. But this is the first time that they've sort of been cross-referencing their stories and realizing that something's up.
So once Barney kind of really can't get out a good excuse for where he's going, he says, the beach, the laser tag, home. And it's just this. He's usually so smooth and quick with the lies, and he's really fucking it up here. And so Lily, who is such a good detective, realizes that means he's about to meet her. And so they all, you know, decide to head out and follow him in a cab because they have a very healthy friendship with boundaries.
Of course. And I wonder, I'd like to go back and see how many episodes involve a cab that Carter and Craig write. I feel like they really like writing scenes with, like, everybody in the car going somewhere, you know? Like, some of the bigger moments have happened like that, where they're sort of all together chasing something down or rooting each other on. So
now that you mention it, I would like to go back and
Right? Because we have the
or just keep
the re-return when they're chasing Stella. Like, there's just all these moments that happen in cabs. It's just Very New York.
They hop in a cab and travel outside the city to Narnia because, as Robin points out, that's basically the only place a girl could live who's right. dating Barney.
Love it.
And it's just so interesting how we see Barney just walk quickly, confidently, right up to this house, open the door, and just walk right in. So no knock, nothing like that. Clearly, he's either very familiar with this place or at the very least expected.
Right, right, right.
So they head over to the door and Lily knocks, and then a very shocked Barney opens the door. And Lily asks to see his girlfriend just as we see this older woman entering the living room. And Lily makes a comment about, you know, call back to a joke earlier before about how he really doesn't have a type, which is not actually true. It's really Asian with some
Asian
boob.
Asian with some boob. So shitty. Oh, Barney.
So, yes, we have this older woman. Mm-hmm. And come to find out, it's Loretta, his mom.
Loretta.
So it is the first time, yeah, that we get to see Loretta. And Loretta is played by Frances Conroy. Mm-hmm. She is an award-winning veteran stage actress. Mm. And so she studied at Dickinson College. I don't know what that means, but I do know Juilliard School.
Oh, wow. Dickinson's in Pennsylvania. I went there for like a thing in college. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. One of the things in her IMDb I thought was really nailed it, because I don't really know her too much from other things.
Oh, I do.
I mean, I know she was in American Horror Story, but I don't watch that. But she was in Joker, which I didn't see. I know she was in the newest season of Arrested Development. Oh. She was on Dead to Me, 6 Feet Under. But so I know her mostly as Loretta.
Yeah.
Right? And this is what it said in her IMDb that I thought was so, it just nailed it. Showing a distinct flair for the offbeat and neurotic.
Yeah.
And then an actress of subtle power, great depth, and astonishing versatility. She has both an aloof serenity and a faintly sad / sensitive ambiance that makes her all the more mysterious and intriguing. And then you pair that with like this wacko bizarre, like she's like comes across as like this sweet mom. Then she's...
But there's stuff under there, yeah.
There's stuff under there. So I just really thought that kind of like nailed her.
Yeah, yep. And all right, if you're going to watch a season of American Horror Story, I know people will have their own opinions, but you should watch Coven because she's amazing in it. That's my favorite Frances Conroy role after Loretta, because Loretta is just full of surprises. So I'm excited. Like you said, the first time we're seeing Loretta, but it's not the first time we've heard her. The first time we hear the voice, it's Megan Mullally. They got her to do it.
It's Karen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's Karen from Will and Grace. The next time it was just some random person. I think that was Showdown. Yeah. And now we have Frances Conroy, which is perfect.
Of course.
It's just like, perfect. Of course. It's, of course. Best casting in the world on this show.
They didn't want him. He didn't want everyone to find out that he was a big old mama's boy. So now that they know, they can just leave. But before they can do that, a blonde woman walks down the stairs and says, Barney, who are all these people? And so he introduces his friends to Betty, his wife. And just then, a little scamp comes running into the living room and hops on Barney's back. And he says, and my son, Tyler. And you're just like, as the audience, what the fuck? Right. And cue the credits. What an opener.
What a cold open. I remember seeing this for the first time. And while I was shocked just by the reveal, I thought it was completely feasible that Barney could have hidden an entire family.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean? Because he's just so good at compartmentalizing.
It's really not a stretch, which is why it makes it all the more better, I think.
Right. And then, but then instead of just letting that be the reveal, they add, you know, the next layer. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to say about his mom, we've also heard him talking on the phone with her before. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it was World's Greatest Couple when Lily like sneaks into his apartment. He's talking to her, and at first you think it's his bookie, which mm-hmm. I think she is also his bookie.
Probably.
Because at the end of the call, you know, he's like, I don't think the gaming commission would want to know what you're up to over there. He like threatens her, and then he's like, I love you too, mom, and gets off the phone. So Loretta's been there. But this is the first full experience we get of her, and what a doozy. So we have officially entered the Twilight Zone, because it's just like this suburban dream, you know, Loretta in her apron and mm-hmm. his blonde wife and their, you know, cute little scamp of a kid, as you said, you know, and Barney's just grinning from ear to ear. And it's like, where did we go? Like, this doesn't even feel like the same show.
Nope.
And as I was watching this again, I was thinking about how even Loretta is playing a role. You know what I mean? Like, because she's not mm-hmm. this like Susie homemaker type. And now she's playing this role of, you know, the sweet grandma who puts out ice cream sundaes. And Barney kind of facilitated that by
creating this fictitious environment. This
family, right? That she, you know, convalesced in. First, we get a call back to Dr. Grossbard.
Yep.
Betty talks about his cholesterol, but in earlier episodes, Dr. Grossbard was his therapist. Mm-hmm. So clearly he's written Dr. Grossbard, his psychologist, into this script, which is pretty unself-aware, I would say, because I don't think Dr. Grossbard would approve of this.
No.
No. And then we get him calling Tyler a scamp, and he spanks him.
Which I love
so much.
Good.
And everybody is just freaked. I mean, this just doesn't make any sense. We get the call back to Bob Barker, you know, when Barney's trying to explain what happened, which I think is interesting that he doesn't even try to keep up the facade, you know, with his friends. Yeah. He's like, what?
He's like,
this is my family. Like, I just never told you guys. He's like, okay, here's the deal.
Maybe he knew that they wouldn't be satisfied with that because
he's caught.
Yeah.
He's caught red-handed. I was wondering if James knows about this.
He has to.
He's probably been trying to talk Barney out of it for 7 years.
Yeah.
But he has to play along.
I mean, there are so many things, like, I'm very curious about. I'm like, how did she ever go to Barney's apartment? Did Barney have another apartment? Did he borrow somebody's?
Right.
You know, like, he went to an open house or something, right. You know?
Right. But that's, you know, and then I'm sure James has gotten sucked into it, right? At holidays and stuff. Like, what do you do? Yeah. There's no way he hasn't told James what's going on. And I mean, James would have seen through it. This has been going on for 7 years. 7 effing years he's been doing this and not telling anybody. So it started when Loretta got sick. It's sweet for Barney, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's something that he tried to do just to let her know that he was okay before she died.
And it's elaborate in the way that only Barney can be. So right. It really makes sense. Like, this part isn't surprising.
No.
Or the fact that he continued it.
Right. But. Like, the hiring the actress to come to the hospital and be like, we're engaged. like, I wouldn't have done that. But for Barney, that would have seemed like normal, right?
Yeah, it would have been like a good idea for him.
But like, someone a little more normal than Barney probably would have been like, we just said that because we wanted you to know that that I was okay. But instead, Betty goes off book and the whole thing snowballs. And instead of coming clean, Barney keeps lying because his mom has made a recovery. And he doesn't, I think a part of him is scared that if he tells her, she'll die. Like, she stayed alive to see her grandchildren, right? And we get, you know, Neil Patrick Harris doing a little side thing about the Tonys and how it's all about who, you know, it's very political, which is cute because, you know, NPH is big into the Broadway mm-hmm. scene.
Theater and all
the
that.
The business of show. So, yeah, the whole thing kind of got out of control. And now 7 years later, here we are. For a while, though, when it came to the child, probably up until Grant was like, or Tyler was like 2 or 3 by the look of those kids, he got away with like borrowing people's children to be Tyler. And then he finally had to do auditions. And I just love the audition scene.
Well, before we get to the audition scene, I love how 1 year when his mom was really trashed on the eggnog, he got away with a bag of flour. And we all know who that bag of flour grew up to be, don't we? The wife of Special Agent Garrett, that's DEA, right. From The Heat.
A 5-pound bag of flour with a hole in it. perfect movie, guys, by the way. If you have not seen The Heat, it's it's better than Bridesmaids because it's all Melissa McCarthy.
And she just fucking shines. Don't at me with Sandra Bullock or any of her bullshit. Like, no.
Sandra's great. Melissa. I mean, Sandra's a great
Sandy's great. She's fine. Yeah, but she's fine.
But it's just, it's Melissa's movie and it's everything. I might have to watch it this weekend now that we've talked about it.
It is still downloaded on my phone. I have no storage ever, but I will refuse to delete it because it's perfect
and
to watch.
I have the exact same experience every time I watch that movie. I watch it just fully enjoying the entire thing right until we hit that diner. And I'm like, I forgot about this fucking scene and I can't watch it. It's so gross.
No,
I don't know if I've ever actually like kept my eyes open.
After the initial viewing, it's like, oh, I'm going to pay attention to something else for a few minutes until it's over. God.
But anyway, guys, go watch The Heat. So like I was saying, eventually he had to hold auditions for casting Tyler, and it's very Broadway casting. Like last episode we saw Lotto Girl casting, and now we see it's sort of like it looks like it's in like a pre-war building, and there's like the big table and light coming in through the windows. It just looks like they're having like dance auditions, right? For like a chorus line, and Barney's drinking his Red Bull. Send in the 11 o'clock. So it's just very, very old Broadway, which I love. And he gets Grant.
Grant. I really go, that's how I got Grant. Yeah. Such disdain.
Right. And Grant doesn't seem to be doing a great job, according to Barney. But Barney has a high standard because he knows child actors were better in the 80s. So, you know, that's a callback, of course, to Neil Patrick Harris's roles as a child, including Doogie Howser.
And they even do, they have like the 80s, you know, music and the transition with the outside scene. Just some quick information about Margaret / Betty.
Ooh.
And Grant / Tyler. So Margaret / Betty is a fellow Canadian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, like Robin. She was recently on Grace and Frankie.
Really?
Yeah. She played Chelsea, and it was like January episodes.
Interesting.
Huh. And similar to Heather Mosby, a.k.a. Erin Cahill, she was in a bunch of Hallmark Christmas movies.
Oh, she looks so the part.
Oh, yeah. Nostalgic Christmas, Christmas in Love, Miss Christmas. She was also on Drop Dead Diva, with which Vicky was also on, and Crazy Meg.
Ooh.
And she was also in the Princess Bride reshoots with the have you seen that?
I haven't.
The celebrities recreating the Princess Bride.
I heard about
at
it.
In their homes. I've seen bits of it. It's really good. Yeah, so I went down a couple of rabbit holes, one of which was how Neil Patrick Harris and David Burko were also in the Princess Bride remake, just like Brooke here. And she was also in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
What?
Yeah, I went down NBH. like I said, a big, huge rabbit hole for that. And if Neil Patrick Harris had turned down his role in Harold and Kumar, do you know who they were going to offer it to?
Who? Billy Zabka.
Ralph fucking Macchio.
Oh,
no!
Holy shit!
But how funny is that? Like, all these, like, I went down this rabbit hole and I just found all this, like, relevant crossover information.
That's crazy. That funny?
Right?
I guess and that's, like, the same level of, like, 80s iconic child star, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, kind of wholesome, sort of. Hadn't heard anything about in a while. And then, so our other friend here, Zachary Gordon, plays Grant / Tyler. And he had been acting since he was 7 years old. I heard his voice, but I couldn't place him.
Yeah.
And I looked him up. He played Greg in Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which I'd seen because of Jack. And it's his voice is like this.
The raspy.
Like, yeah, and like stereotypical grating little kid voice.
Husky, yeah.
Yeah, he's done a lot of voice work, too. And so if you have any little ones at your house, you might recognize his voice. He's Gil on Bubble Guppies, who is, like, one of the leaders of the Bubble Guppies. They're, like, these, like, mermaid things.
Hmm.
He is also going to be in the reboot of American Pie.
Ew.
I mean,
I don't want
maybe the phone
that.
Just ain't ringing.
The phone just ain't ringing, you know? You gotta take a money job.
He's gotta take a money job. Yeah. That was what I had thought anyway. Yeah. So that's
nice.
That's my little fun fact. Also, Barney's blog has the casting call for Betty Stinson and for Tyler Stinson.
I love it so much.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You should definitely take a gander at it. The skills for Betty Stinson are things like breathtaking breasts, hot, like at least a 9, provide own swimsuits. And then for the kid, it's familiar with the Stanislavski system of acting, background in improv preferred, stage combat, willing to do anything hot moms encouraged.
So
exactly
good.
What you would expect.
Right, perfect. Yeah. Speaking of Ralph Macchio, we get the introduction to maybe one of the best runners on this show because the payoff is so good. Karate Kid. We find out that Barney has been watching Karate Kid all wrong, or maybe we've all been watching it wrong and he's been watching it right, because we find out that he does not cheer for Ralph Macchio. No. He cheers for the mean blonde boy because obviously he sees himself in him. AKA Johnny Lawrence of the Cobra Kai Dojo.
And I love the way he bounces. And I love that. Get your head out of your ass, Lily.
Yeah, get your head out of your ass, Lily, is another thing that will come back around. But the way he does that, you just know that Johnny Zabka did that move in the movie.
Yeah.
We also get the runner of Everyone Hating New Jersey, because that's where Ralph Macchio was from. I don't even
A
know.
A young upstart from New Jersey.
Daniel's son, right? Daniel, yeah.
I've never seen Karate Kid.
Me? I think I've seen pieces of it. I mean, and it's one of those things that probably because of How I Met Your Mother mostly, I've absorbed so much of it into just like through the zeitgeist. So like sweep the leg and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I know like what happens, but
I know enough. I don't need to
I was busy watching True Beverly Hills. Okay. Listen, you want to talk about mean blonde children?
Whew.
That little nightmare. We're just giving out tons of great movie ideas, guys. You should really go watch all of them.
True Beverly Hills is a fucking gem.
Every single one of her outfits.
The cage. Ugh.
I want to have lining? Like 8 little girls for children and then just be Phyllis Neffler for Halloween.
Shelley Long.
Amazing. Amazing. An icon. Okay. So anyway.
I love the cigarette. Oh,
it's also good. It's also good. Okay. So Ted, of course, recognizes Betty at last from this very pretentious theater that's basically like, you're not supposed to get it.
Yeah. So I did do some research into Bertolt Brecht, right?
Is he
so
real?
This play. Yeah, no, it really is real. He's real. So this play is actually called St. Joan of the Stockyards, but Ted has to be pretentious and use the German name. Mm-hmm. And this has to do with capitalism and religion, whatever. But I was reading a little bit about him. So it's not really that he was known for alienating the audience, like what Ted and Peggy, that's what I'm calling her now, I guess.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was a Marxist, very political, but he wanted people to understand. He has it's called the VFAC, which translates to distancing. They want the audience to remain engaged and interested, but not like so absorbed that they would get lost. So they would understand that this was a play. So they would do different techniques, like narration, coming out of the role and doing a third person narration. So I was like thinking of Saved by the Bell, where Zach would do the timeout and talk to the audience.
Yeah, like break the fourth
and tell them
wall.
Kind of what was going on.
Gotcha.
Speaking the stage directions. Sometimes they would have like a placard they would hold up. So maybe they have a couple fighting and one of them holds up something that gives you a clue to what's going on inside their head. Like, I'm having an affair.
Ooh,
right?
Cool.
So you know that now, but the other person doesn't.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really about alienating the audience. It was about making sure they're aware that it was a play, keeping them distant, like not getting them so emotionally invested in the play that they lost the message, because again, he was super political.
Yeah.
I got super into it. There was like a whole like article I was reading about all the different techniques, like really, really cool And they just made it sound so pretentious and douchey. But
I'd love to see a play like that.
Right? Me too. I was like, wow, I'm really interested in this.
Yeah, I love that.
I'll send you the link of like the techniques and stuff like that, just because it was really cool. Yeah,
I love that. Ted's being pretentious. This is maybe the most pretentious we've seen him yet. Yeah. It gets worse, guys. But this is sort of the jumping off point for like what a douche he can be, and it's mm-hmm. it's just wonderful. And I love that it's about acting.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that he knows people that like literally talk like this. Do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Josh and like everybody on set. So this is very Liz hates watching anything where it's about acting, like any sort of movie where the main characters are actors, like yeah. as their job. She like yeah. cannot stand that shit because it gets pretentious like this. So this episode, it's so much about acting. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that Liz would hate this episode.
It is. There is a lot of cringy.
You know what I mean? Like the auditions pieces. And, you know, Grant and Robin talking about acting. And then we have Barney and Betty and Ted talking about acting. So it's like it's just a lot about the craft.
The craft. Yes. Oh, I hate when.
My craft, my instrument, you know?
But people, so as you guys know, I work in education, and people talk about education, educators, like, oh, she's a master of her craft.
Ew.
I loved getting to see her craft. I had that in one of my evaluations, something about, like, my craft, like, getting to see, and I was just like, the only craft I want is, like,
mac that and blue cheese, box. Bitch. I know. Yeah, writing is really bad for that, too.
Yeah.
Let's talk about craft.
I took a class about writing in the young children, and one of our textbooks was the writer's craft.
Yeah, yep, that's a thing. So my question is, how much is Barney paying these people?
So on the casting call, it says that for Betty, the pay is scale.
Scale. Great.
And for the role of Tyler, it's $50 a day, some meals.
Some meals included, especially ice cream.
They were seeking a male ages 6 to 8, preferably blonde and chiseled.
Ted talks about how Lady Theater grabbed him long ago, and we get this flashback, and it's just a great moment, a little trick here, where you think it's Ted as the little kid who's like saying the line, and then Ted jumps in, cut, and he's like a full teenager, and then takes the role from his small cousin.
Yeah, I said he pulled a Mr. G from Summer Heights High.
Yes.
He didn't trust anyone else to really pull off his vision.
Right, so. Direct and star, of course. Yeah, Ted's always wanted to act, and Betty's gonna give him some tips. So while that's happening in the background, we then see that Grant is pretty jaded with his role as Tyler, and he mm-hmm. finds some common ground with Robin, who has just accepted this job, which initially she was excited about because it was going to keep her in the country, but it's at 4:30 in the morning. And so she feels like she should have been further along by now, and so does Grant. So mm-hmm. I just love that little relationship is blooming.
We cut to the kitchen where we have Marshall and Lily helping Loretta get ready for dinner. Even though I'm pretty sure Betty said she was going to do that, but whatever, it's fine. And Lily makes a comment that she can't believe they've never met Loretta before. She's such a great mom. And then this is when we get to know a little bit more about Loretta and more of her backstory from her own mouth. Because we hear a lot of the stories Barney tells us, but now we get to hear them right from her. And she says that, you know, she wasn't always the best mother when she was younger. She was a whore. Mm. And Marshall and Lily are like, what? And she's like, a whore, dear.
A dirty whore.
Just like in this very sweet mom, grandma voice, mm-hmm. very matter of fact. But, like, you know, she's just very open and honest and just, it's just who she is. Yeah. So.
And it makes so much more sense than whatever Barney has been trying to portray, or any of them have. Like, this is the sort of the beginning of the cracks forming, because now yes. we see who Loretta really is.
Right. She's not this sweet Well, she's sweet, but she's not this wholesome.
Yeah, she's somewhere in the middle, which most people are. But you know,
she's a person with the depth.
Yeah, but Barney is very black and white. So
I love she tells this story that you can basically like you could swap out Neil Patrick Harris for her here. You know, she kind of looks off into the distance and says, there's nothing about the thrill of looking into someone's eyes and thinking, I don't know your name and you don't know mine. But for the next 8 minutes, we're going to rock this gas station bathroom right off its foundation. Like, it just, it's like literally gets worse. Like, oh, I don't know your name. You don't know mine. Like, that's bad. Oh, but for the next 8 minutes, oh, it's not even like a long thing. Right. We're going to rock this gas station. Ooh, bathroom. Disgusting. Yeah. Like, all of it.
And it's just... You can see it. Like, I can see, like, the tractor trailers parked outside. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, it's so vivid.
It's a hot day. Yeah. They're all a little, like, sweaty.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Oh.
Loretta.
Yeah. So we cut to Marshall confronting Barney, saying he has to tell her she's too sweet and caring. She's slightly, you know, graphic, but she really deserves to know the truth. And I agree with Marshall there. She does deserve to know the truth. Yeah. But Barney, you know, thinks that the truth will kill her. Mm. Marshall sees a little bit of his own mom in Loretta, which makes Lily kind of snort.
Yeah.
And come to find out, Lily hates her. Marshall's mom.
Yeah.
Yikes. Hates her. And we from a story Lily tells, we hear it might be mutual. Apparently on their wedding day on the way back up the aisle. She stops Lily and says, oh, you're not going to be forever. It's not forever, sweetie. Remember, Marshall's going to heaven.
So good.
Oh,
well, I mean, I'm thinking that Lily probably only started hating Mrs. Erickson because Mrs. Erickson treated her this way.
And I wonder, too, like, how much of it is, I mean, like, you broke her baby boy's heart. He was the runt of the family.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like,
interesting.
If that were me, I would naturally feel a little uncomfortable around Marshall's mom, but then also knowing how she felt towards me.
Yeah.
Oof,
that's interesting because I kind of forgot about them breaking up for a little while. I assumed that they just always didn't really get along, but things seemed okay when she went home for Thanksgiving season one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes way more sense that Mrs. Erickson doesn't really have a soft spot for Lily.
Loretta comes out giving everyone a 2-minute warning for meatloaf, which Tyler no likey.
Ew. I hate it so much.
Which is just probably the most obnoxious thing. I hate myself for even saying it. I wish you could just beep it out on the...
I know, right?
Replay it.
He's clearly been like trying to like get a catchphrase and it's like, you're not actually on TV, right?
Right. And I love how, like, Barney has no patience for him and no time. He's like, you're not getting a catchphrase, Tyler.
And I love
Grant. He's like, I'm not afraid to recast.
I know. I love the way he talks to Grant this whole episode. I love when adults are just, like, cruel to children. Sounds
my
horrible,
uncle
but
is
it's
like
so
that.
Funny.
Not cruel, David? But just like, yeah, it doesn't, yeah, of course. You know, you know how he is. Yeah. And he just says, like, we were at my parents' house or something, and my niece was hungry. And she's like, I'm hungry. And he goes, well, it's not time to eat yet. It's like, what is this? Children, do they think they can dictate our day?
Ew,
it's not
children.
Lunchtime. Ugh.
Ugh.
I just love it, yeah.
I love it.
Also, so come to find out.
I love him so much.
He's the best, right?
Yep.
Come to find out, Barney has completely scripted this dinner. Mm-hmm. And like to have like these Hallmark movie type stories in them to help his mom feel good. And like Barney has this happy family. And I love like during one of the stories, Barney breaks the fourth wall of his audience to lean over to tell Ted, this is what you're actually like in a relationship.
Very Brechtian of him, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I was lolling. I love that part. It's what I know there was like another scene, right, where Barney does a similar thing.
He does it with Abby.
Yeah.
When he's like proposing to her and dressing like and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I just got like a light bulb of like this entire episode is Brechtian. Right? It it's like the play within the play, but we are very aware that it's a play.
Yeah.
Whoa. Holy shit.
Craig and Carter are truly masters of their craft.
True masters of craft. And I mean, I wish we'd gotten a moment during this episode where they break the fourth wall with the audience.
Yeah.
But still, I'm calling it Brechtian. I'm saying they did it on purpose because this is awesome. Because
why else would you drop that in there?
Right.
I mean, they could have named any other pretentious playwright.
But this is so, this is based on what you have said. This is a very Brechtian setup.
Yeah.
Where you know it's not real. And there's you know, a theme and a message and everything. So very cool.
About that.
How about it?
I love it.
Right?
I love it. Yes. I love it. Deep dive. I'm so glad that I looked up all that shit.
Dude, me too. You're the best at that. Nice job, Gumshoe.
I love during the dinner scene, Grant basically proves Barney's point in how much he sucks because Tyler can't even remember his goddamn lines.
Nope.
But he, you know, starts to improvise a little bit and makes his scary dream even a little scarier by saying that the dinosaur bones chase him, which totally freaks Marshall out.
Yep.
But then Ted has to now, Barney, who's written and directed this show, will now have to star in it and take over to tell the rest of the dream.
Yeah.
And the nightmare was that you and Mommy didn't know how much I loved you, so I wanted to come in and tell you it was this much.
And you can see that Loretta is like nauseous.
It really is. And, you know, Grant really flubbed the scene, but Robin has his back because she knows what it's like to take a job that's beneath you.
Right.
And so she comments that it was a good job. And at this point, Loretta's gone to get the ice cream. She's not here.
Yeah.
And so Barney tells him that he's going to go in there and eat that sundae, even though he's lactose intolerant, because you know who isn't?
Tyler. Tyler isn't. And this is the part where I was like, this is very clearly weird for Loretta.
Mm-hmm.
Like this can't feel right. And we know that she hates Tyler. So and I was just thinking, how much of this is for Loretta and how much of it is for Barney? And not just I want to keep my mom alive, but also I want a family,
mm-hmm.
you know, because when we saw him again in World's Greatest Couple, he kind of loved living with Lily and having that husband-wife thing, dynamic. You know? So this is kind of like, I'm sure it feels like a chore at this point, but it also kind of feels like he's doing it for himself to satisfy this side of himself.
He didn't have this model growing up either, you know? He didn't have that.
Right. I did say that he totally stole the string quartet idea from Ted.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Right?
I know.
So now it's time for ice cream, and they all go into the kitchen where Ted and Betty are making out. Tyler, no likey. And the illusion has come crashing down. And I said that it only took one night with his friends after 7 years of doing this for the entire thing to just fall
apart. Too many variables he can't control.
Yeah. And I love that he tries to make Tyler cry by shaking him. So great. And then we jump into this full scene study that Ted is really just going for, because we get the flashback. It's amazing that they managed to get a flashback to like moments earlier with everybody in the same house, right? Like they're just so good.
They're so good.
So we see Betty teaching Ted all the rules about acting. And Ted decides that this is the moment to try them out. And so he spins this insane yarn about the overnight car the overnight train to Monte Carlo and the billiards car and his blind.
Who betrayed me?
Yeah, scoundrel. It felt very much like Murder on the Orient Express, like very old timey, right?
I went to Google to see if it was actually like taken from an old timey story, because it did feel like Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
But I didn't find anything.
Really good reboot, by the way. Another good movie. I agree. Very good. Except, yes. You know, Kenneth Branagh needs to just have a seat. But
I do like him, though. I loved him in, like, when I had to watch all, like, the Shakespeare movies.
But he
in
always high school. Casts himself as the I lead know. That he's directing. Like Mr. G. Sir, please, Mr. G. Barney gets slapped twice. We see two slaps.
And I love how Betty / Margaret's like, yes. Yeah, yes. In the background, like, she's so proud of her student.
Yeah. Ted's craft is really improving. And Loretta is just so confused. Grant actually pulls off this really sad, I don't want my mom and dad to get divorced. It's like, damn.
Is that real life?
Right, I know. Oh, when Ted says, I wasn't so much trying to be Ted as I was trying to get out of Ted's way. Writers do that shit too. Where they're like, I let my characters talk to me. And I just try to get out of their way. And, like, yeah, to some degree, it's real. But also, don't say it out loud because that makes me want to slap you. Lily tells Barney again he needs to tell the truth about this. He needs to just say it. But now Marshall doesn't agree. Suddenly, Marshall, who we all know as, you know, Honest Abe, thinks that maybe sometimes you shouldn't say everything you think.
You should lie, like, a little bit.
Yeah. Because now that he knows how his wife really feels about his mom, he's not so keen on the truth.
No. So outside on the front step, Robin and Grant share this, like, little heart-to-heart. You know, she is proud of him, and, you know, maybe this will turn a corner for him, and maybe it's same for her. And then he picks up on some imaginary vibes and leans in for a kiss, which is gross.
So funny.
Barney decides to tell Loretta the truth and first starts off saying that Tyler's dying. And when he goes, Betty's going to off herself. And that's probably going to go down pretty soon. So, which is just the fucking best.
Yep. Amazing.
Then he stops, changes course, and tells Loretta the actual truth that they're actors that he hired. And Loretta's actually a little relieved because she hated Betty, yep. And she really hated Tyler. Yeah. I mean, Tyler, no, likey, what the hell is that? And those fake friends. Ugh.
So good.
But in the end, she's just really confused why Barney would do that. Like, she gets it, but doesn't. And she really just wants him to be happy. She says to him that she gives him this little piece of advice that if you find someone special, like, hold on to her. Don't run away from it. And, of course, that cues Robin to then open the door and tell Barney the cab's there and it's time to go. And I have to also call out the little story Loretta shares with Barney about they're kind of like, she kind of one-ups him to say that, like, she's definitely, like, way more terrible than he is.
Yep.
Because she left him for 3 weeks to be passed around like a bong by some band.
Grand Funk Railroad. Oh,
thank you. I couldn't remember what it was.
There's a real funk undertone to this whole show. You know, Marshall has the band later on. Yeah. And then season one with George Clinton, with Lily out in San Francisco.
You are right.
Right? I feel like
way more references than I would ever have ever heard on any other show.
The dudes love the funk. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely feels like we're ramping up toward something, toward at least Barney expressing how he feels to Robin. We don't know how that'll pan out, but his mom saying that to him, I think, and I think this whole thing sort of crashing down, it's like, okay, maybe now without all this shit, he can actually introduce someone to his mom who he actually cares about, you know, with all this weird stuff out of the way, which is another underlying theme in this whole show is sometimes. And I mean, someone's literally said this, you know, something has to fall apart for something better to fall together. So sometimes you're so caught up in something that's not right for you that you aren't free to find the right thing. So
right.
Barney seems to be sort of clearing the decks of some really, this is a really big flim flam that he's been pulling, which,
like, how much money dude, has he?
I know that's all I could think about. So back in the cab, Barney's riding with everyone and Ted is not in the cab at the moment, and he and Robin share a little look, and then we hear Lily in the back seat, and she's on the phone and she's apologizing, and Marshall just looks so emotional and happy. And we find out that, no, that's not Marshall's mom. That's Betty in the other cab, or Margaret in the other cab with Ted. And they're coaching her to make Marshall feel like she's, you know, making amends with his mom. And, you know, it's this big moment where she says, I love you, Mom. And it just kills Marshall. Like, he can't stand it. He loves it so much. So, and all I could think was, like, there's no way he would get off, let his mom hang up without talking to her. But we'll allow it for such a sweet and funny little scene here. And then after the credits, we just get this wrap up of all the movies that Barney has rooted for the villains in. Karate Kid again. Mm-hmm. Die Hard, because he died hard. Hans Gruber.
Movies named after him.
Title character. Breakfast Club. Barney likes Principal Vernon.
He says, the only character wearing a suit.
The teacher, but it's the principal. And that makes so much sense. Like, that's just such a smart little line. And then, of course, the Terminator, which we've seen. We've seen him be the Terminator. So that's the Stinsons. What'd you think, Caitlin?
It's such a fun, quick episode. Yeah. Lots of scenes, no real clear delineation between them. Yep. Just quick. Lots of flashbacks and callbacks. Classic Carter.
Right? Packed with little treats for the longtime fans, for sure. Let's get into these legendary moments. Mm-hmm. So the first one is a new one. It's from Jessica, who found us through Dawson's Creeps, which is my buddy Zoe's podcast about Dawson's Creek. So if you guys like that show, you should check that out. And Jessica says, this is hands down my favorite quote from the show. The whole show is in this episode. It's when we first meet Loretta, and she's telling Lily she wasn't a great mother. A whore, dear. A dirty whore. I'm not proud of it, but still, I had some fun. And the quote about the gas station. The way Frances Conroy stares off into the distance like she's reliving the moment right there in the kitchen completes me and is just so funny. Thank you, Jessica.
Our next legendary moment comes from David, who's one of our patrons. And David writes, great Barney episode. First legmo is one that's so weirdly relatable to me. It's when Barney is going on about how he doesn't have a type, only to instantly reveal his specific one. Just because it's the kind of question I get all the time when people find out I'm bi and want to know which I prefer. And I do the same kind of spiel, even though, like Barney, I absolutely do have one I prefer. Second legmo is Barney being such a mama's boy. So cute and lovely. Wish I could have had that with my mom. LMAO.
Aww. Or
do you say it out loud? Laugh my ass off?
I say LMAO.
Okay. I know. It's like such a sweet. I love how like honest too their relationship is.
Well, now it is.
Now.
Starting now.
Sorry, now. Third is Marshall getting so defensive about his mother protecting him because he was the runt of the family. For God's sakes, I'm only 6'4". Even though if I were Lily, I would also despise her, LMAO, which leads into my also legmo to this episode for introducing Barney's love of the real Karate Kid, which, after watching Him Yum, is the only way I can view that movie now.
Good one, David.
Love it.
All right, next up is our friend Johnny, and Johnny's also a patron. Johnny says, hey, K&K, there are lots of great one-liners in this episode. That's because Carter and Craig wrote it. These lines are my legmo. My three favorites come from Grant and Loretta. The first time Robin and Grant are sitting on the couch and Robin says, I'm almost 30. Grant replies, come on, you look great. I love your nose job. She responds, I never had a nose job. And then Grant comes back and says, right, me neither. And then gives her a wink. Priceless. I know, Grant is so mature for his age. But that's the
biz. I like to think that this Grant and this role is what helped Zachary Gordon get the role of Greg in Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Because he is like, in that movie, he is like kind of like a wise beyond his.
Interesting. Next up is when Marshall and Lily are in the kitchen with Loretta and they are talking about how they had never met. Then Loretta starts talking about how she was a whore and meeting up with a stranger in a gas station bathroom. That scene is funny to watch because when I first watched it, I was just as shocked by what she said as Marshall and Lily were. And then the third one, it's the scene where Robin and Grant are on the front porch and Robin is giving him props for doing a great job. Grant says that it may be the same for her as he starts a new job. Robin gives him a side hug, and Grant totally misses what is going on, closes his eyes, and tries to go in for a kiss. Hysterical. Thanks for being awesome, Johnny B.
Our next legendary moment. I was like, wait, no, that's what it is. It's Legmo.
Legmo.
Legendary moment comes from Maddie, and Maddie is brand new to sending us in a legendary moment. And it is, my legendary moment for the Stinsons was hard to choose because I really, really love this episode. My two main ones were Barney's mom. She's fucking hilarious, and they cast that woman so damn well. I'm still not over it. Same.
Yep.
And Barney's view on the Karate Kid. One of the many jokes throughout the series that's long running, but this one is hilarious because it reminds me of how much more of the show we have. Yep. Thank you guys so much for your podcast. I'm so, so grateful to have this. Love you, ladies.
Yay. Thanks, Maddie.
Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite running
jokes. Gags, yeah, I think. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so next up is Matthew, who's one of our patrons, and Matthew says, "Hi, K and K. Ooh, I got a real long one." All right. Let me start by apologizing for the length of what I'm about to write. I wanted to properly explain my thoughts and feelings, so I am probably very much in the minority, but I am honestly not a fan of the Stinsons. I'm sure this opinion will be seen as heresy by some. Oh, psh, who cares? We're all here, and we all like different things about the show. Mm-hmm. Especially as this episode is written by Craig and Carter. But the main plot line of Barney inventing a family to lie to his mother, of all people, just does nothing for me and actively frustrates me. I don't buy that even as a mama's boy, Barney would go to such lengths to lie specifically to his mother. And keeping up with that lie for what is clearly many years just seems so far beyond mama's boy behavior and into crazy WTF behavior, even for Barney. I'm sure people will disagree because Barney is known for doing really outlandish things, but that's just how I feel. Additionally, like Loretta, I dislike Margaret / Betty, and I really hate Grant / Tyler and his eye-rolling catchphrase. I'm guessing this episode was trying to satirize typical goofy sitcom families, given that the title is a play on The Simpsons. Oh! But
and Barney and Betty, like the Rebels.
Oh, my God, that's right. I know, I was thinking, like, Betty is very, like, 50s, you know, TV show. But, yeah, Barney and Betty Rubble. But if that was the goal, it just fell flat for me. I wish I liked the episode, but I just don't. That's okay, dude. However, I did manage to glean a couple legendary moments from the episode. The first moment is, in this case, a legendary character. Barney's mom, Loretta, is hilarious and amazing to me. And Frances Conroy is equally fantastic in how she plays the character. I am eagerly anticipating episodes in future seasons that feature her prominently because they are so wonderful. The second moment is Barney's amusing devotion to the villains of movies that he sees as being the heroes, especially because the primary target of adoration is Billy Zabka, and I'm not going to say anything else about that. As usual, thank you for everything you do. Hey Beautiful is always a warm ray of sunlight in this hellscape of 2020. Again, apologies for the long-winded rant. I accept any flack given for my dissent. Call me the Ralph Macchio of legendary moments. However, I promise I will be back to universally happier thoughts with the next episode. Sorry, bro. Stay beautiful and awesome. Thank you, Matthew. And you know thanks, what? Matthew. You're not alone. There are other people in our Legmos coming up that we're not huge fans. So,
yeah,
you're in good company.
All right. So next up is from Jeff, another one of our patrons, who wrote a little bit of a shorter Legmo for us. Hi, K&K. My Legmo for the Stinsons is the initial reveal that Barney is married. The first time you see it, it is a jaw dropper. Mm. Also, Loretta has presumably shown all her friends pics of her daughter-in-law and grandson. I wonder how she explained that they just vanished one day. Best Jeff. I know.
So true. I mean, this is a face crack, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Face crack. Next up is Tish, one of our patrons, and Tish says, "Hey ladies, hope you're both doing well. I loved the full interview with Gloria. I loved all the advice she gave. She seems like the sweetest." She was awesome. Mm-hmm. "I'm so proud of you ladies for setting a goal and going after it. You ladies inspire me to go after things I want." Oh, Tish. "With 2020 being the way it is, it can be so easy to get caught up in the state of the world around you, but you two set a goal and you didn't let that stop you." Oh, that's so nice. Anyway, I digress to the episode now. The look on Ted, Marshall, Lily, and Robin's faces when Barney introduces his wife and son will always be my legendary moment. Regards, Tish." Good one, Tish, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Tish. It's so sweet and kind of you. Next up is Rick. And Rick is also a patron, and Rick writes, "Hi, ladies. Great episode. My legendary moment is when Barney has his family acting out his over-the-top happy family script at the dinner table. And then he turns to Ted and says, 'This is what you're actually like in a relationship.' Perfect. It still makes me laugh out loud after many rewatches. Also, some quick hits. Asian with some boob. It really does track throughout the series that Barney is more of a boob guy. It actually explains so much."
Yep.
"Frances Conroy playing a single mother who lies to her son that is his true father is a famous person, a la Joker."
Interesting,
yeah. "Neil Patrick Harris joking about the two political Tony Awards that he would eventually host." "And to go with the movie bit at the end, Barney probably roots for the Empire in Star Wars based on the armor in his apartment."
Storm pooper.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
For sure. The diaper. Okay, yeah. So next, thanks, Rick. The next one is Lisa. And Lisa says, "Hey, ladies, I have to say that this isn't an episode I purposely watch. I'll watch it in sequence, but I will never seek it out. Not really sure why, because it's a decent episode. Anyway, my legendary moment is Call Me Crazy, but child actors were way better in the 80s, followed by the Doogie Howser theme song. Love a good NPH plug. Second choice is the introduction of Loretta. Frances Conroy is incredible. For you AHS fans, Balenciaga!" Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for putting that in, because that is quite the scene in AHS.
Next up is Sam P., another one of our patrons. Sam says, "My legendary moment is Loretta. While it was clear that Barney and James were raised by wolves, she really loves them. Plus, I think she's hilarious. P.S. Shout out to Barney's goat voice crying about the Terminator after introducing a great runner for Barney's character."
Yeah, goat voice. Yes. All right. Next up is Dina. And Dina says, "Hi, K&K. I'm sorry, but I high key hate this episode." Ooh. "It's so damn stupid." See, Matthew? It was Matthew, right, that didn't like it? Yeah. All right. So First of all, the basic premise is flimsy. There's a much easier solution to being trapped by a made-up pregnancy. Ever heard of a made-up miscarriage, Barnacle? I know it's an awful thing to experience in reality, but how is casting a fake wife and kid forever a better solution? Guys, we're talking about someone who did fake baby, okay?
Oh, fake baby. Fake baby. I was there. It was fake baby.
I was there. Trust me. It's fake baby. Like, I love that the question is, how is this better? It's not better, but it's Barney. It's Barney.
Nothing's better, right, when it comes to him.
Which leads to my second point. It's so fucking awful to think that something like that can be staged. Imagine if your cousin or sibling, never mind child, suddenly revealed that their family, whom you've known and loved for a decade, was never real, including a child you watched grow up from a baby. What the fuck? That's some sociopath Dark level Dina. Shit. Damn, Dina. Barney may have sketchy morals at times, but he's not Satan. And to resolve it, we have to have Loretta hate the kid she thinks is her grandson. Yikes. I mean, the whole family is psychologically not well. Like, no. That's true. But anyway, this is one of those episodes that I decided on my head was written for a filler and to introduce Loretta, but isn't actually canon because it's just stupid as hell. Begrudging Legmo is the reference to Bob Barker because, of course, as we all know, he's Barney's dad. And, of course, the introduction of Loretta. My other Legmo is Kate suggesting a meetup in Canada. Yes, as soon as it's safe, no takebacks. Much love, Dina. Yeah, dude, I am ready to go to the Great White North.
Same.
I love it up there. I'm down.
All right, next up is Ben, another one of our patrons, and he says, "Hey, ladies, here are my Legmos for the Stinsons. NPH wiping hands on a guy after coming out of the bathroom."
Oh, yeah.
"Ted's backstory about cheating and Barney's reactions. And this is a classic Himyam episode that has a lot of the traits, like surprise twists, and it's great. Hope you're all doing well, Ben."
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, last but not least is Daryl, who's been a patron for a little while, but this is his first Legmo. And Daryl says, "Hey, ladies, I hope I'm not too late to get my legendary moment in. I'm a longtime listener, first-time writer, and I was worried I'd miss this one. I love this episode. Really, from the gate, my legendary moment from this episode is when Barney has his miniature tangent about the Tony Awards. Every time I watch this episode, I crack up at that. All of my years of high school and college theater come rushing back, and I die wheezing." Oh, Daryl, same. Before I go, I want to shout out my friend Kristen, who is also a Hamium super fan. I got her into the podcast recently, and we took a 3-hour road trip for a friend's wedding. On the way down, it was completely Hamium themed, to my surprise. She got us footlong sandwiches, legitimate sandwiches, lemon heads for the lemon law, a cupcake for Victoria, and Mountain Dew with tantrum written on over all over it. Oh my God, that's so cool.
That is awesome.
She wanted to bring a whole pineapple, but decided against it. What a good friend. At the wedding, we kept making the same Ted, what's in a gin and tonic? What's in a gin and tonic joke? And I tried to get free glasses of wine, cough, cough, for the bride. Plus, on the way home, to top it all off, we dedicated a solid hour to nonstop repeat plays of 500 Miles before listening to our favorite Hamium episodes of Hey Beautiful. Wow!
Wow.
That is so cool. I want to do that.
That is awesome.
Great job. Right? Yeah, that's amazing. Great job as always, and I'll see you next time, Daryl. Thank you so much, Daryl. That was an awesome letter.
That was really great,
right?
Yeah. So Kate, what is your legendary moment for this episode?
Oh God, it's really hard to decide. I think I'll save Loretta as my legendary moment for a future episode, and okay. I'll say that it's the introduction of the Karate Kid runner. Yeah. Because it's just so funny, like that he roots for the enemies and the bad guys. It's just so great.
Same. Mine is, I had two kind of. One was just when Barney brings up that his dad left to go on The Price is Right, because we find out about that in Showdown. And who wrote that episode?
Gloria Calderon Kelly.
So I like the callback to that.
Yeah.
But also just when he is talking about how he roots for Billy Zabka's character, and he does the whole little like bounce.
The Cobra
and then
Kai Dojo.
Yeah, the get your head out of your ass, Lily. Yes. Get your head out of your ass, Lily, is the legendary moment for me, but also the whole
thing.
Yeah, it's just so good. I love the villains.
Love it so much.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time for Sorry, Bro, which is a very...
Karen!
Very good episode, Karen. Yes. Can't wait for Karen. Make sure to send us your legendary moments to heybeautifulpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to put in the subject that it is for Sorry, Bro. That way we can find it easily. We also want to thank Rachel's Cookies and Treats for being our sponsor. Don't forget to leave us some love on social media so that you can enter in our cookie contest.
Yes.
And don't forget, if you love this recap, leave us an iTunes review so we can help our HB family to grow. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher so you never miss a recap. And we hope you'll come back next episode.
Because it's going to be legend. Wait for it.
This has been Hey Beautiful with your hosts, Kate Gorton and Caitlin Turner. Our intro outro music is by Owl All.